I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. I started reading My Life in Middlebarch by Rebecca Mead this weekend, and I was immediately taken by it. That its author is a fine writer in her own right probably made the book all the more engaging, but what grabbed me was her enthusiasm about a book. It's really fun to see someone ponder a book, a great one at that, George Eliot's Middlemarch. What Ms. Mead has done is tell the reader about her experiences with the book from reading it from the first time at the age of 17 and subsequent readings of it throughout her life. What she's also done in this book is seek understanding about her life and the meaning she derives from the Victorian novel. It's a great memoir of Ms. Mead's life and a thoughtful look at the life of Eliot, as well as a critical look at Middlemarch. Rebecca Mead joins me now. I'll get her to tell us about this book and the aspects of her life that manifested itself through the pages of Middlemarch and the spirit of Middlemarch that haunts her life still. Rebecca Mead is a staff writer at The New Yorker and the author of One Perfect Day, The Selling of the American Wedding. Recently, Joyce Carol Oates said in The New York Times, quote, "My life in Middlemarch is a poignant testimony to the abiding power of fiction." This is a Bond Street book, which is an imprint of Random House. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Rebecca Mead. Ms. Mead, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Have you been reading the reviews for this book?
I have, yes. I must confess I'm one of those writers that does read their reviews. I don't reread them, unlike Middlemarch. But yes, I have read the reviews, yeah. And yeah. I've been wonderfully moved by how people have taken it to their hearts. I'm very, very pleased by the response it's been getting.
Yeah, I must have read probably about a dozen reviews in preparing for our interview today. And what struck me was most of them are from women. Have you noticed that?
Well, I suppose there is a preponderance of reviews by women. There have been some by men too, but yes, you're probably right. Yes.
And then the other thing is that most of the reviewers had read Middlemarch heretofore.
Yes, I think some of them had read Middlemarch in order to review the book, but some of them had been already lovers of it and so were primed to have my take on it added to their own.
Yeah, see, I've never read it, and I guess I've always thought of it as a book for women. I guess that's incorrect, that assumption, right?
No, it's deeply not a book exclusively for women. I mean, it's not only is it about men to a large extent, there are three young men in particular whose lives we follow through Middlemarch, but it's about issues that are of equal importance to men as to women. I mean, you know, what should one do with one's ambition? You know, what does one owe to oneself, to one's parents, to one's family? I mean, marriage is often sort of thought of as stories about marriage are thought of about are thought of as stories for women, but you know, men get married too. And it's a very profoundly non-gender specific work in that way.
Now, I like Downton Abbey. Would I like Middlemarch?
It's not merely... I mean, I like Downton Abbey, although I must confess I haven't been watching the latest season. But there's really no comparison. I mean, Downton Abbey is a soap opera. And, you know, Middlemarch is gripping. And it would make, and has indeed made, a very good TV miniseries. The BBC did one about 20 years ago. But it's so much more than just a kind of light entertainment, which is basically what I think Downton Abbey is.
Now, you were 17 when you first read it. Virginia Woolf, I guess, described it as an adult novel. Was 17 the right age, do you think, for someone to pick up this book?
Well, it was the right age for me to pick it up and to become completely immersed in it and to really, really love it. I mean, the first character we meet is a young woman. She's 19, and she is at the beginning of her life, and she's deciding who she's going to marry and what's going to become of her. And she has aspirations to do things beyond just marrying the, you know, titled gentleman next door. And it spoke to me very as a story then about a young woman trying to figure out what to do with her life, because I was a young woman hoping and aspiring to do something with my life and not really knowing what that was going to be. But, I mean, I think that it unfolds to a reader with much more complexity as one grows older. And as I've grown older with it, I see the characters in a different light. I see aspects of my own life, you know, reflected or, that Middlemarch can give me a lens through which to look at things that I've done. And you grow up with the character so that you end up, you're the age that the people who seem kind of elderly when you first read it as a young person are. It is, Virginia Woolf called it one of the few English novels written for grown-up people, and it's a very grown-up book, but, it can be read by a teenager or somebody, 70 years older.
And so how long after how many pages into it did you feel that you were taken by it and that this would be a book that you'd read the rest of your life?
Well, I didn't know that it was going to be a book that I would read the rest of my life then, and I can't tell you exactly, at what point I was seized by it, but I do know that I wanted very much to be the kind of person that appreciated it. I mean, I knew that it was regarded as a kind of monument of English literature, and I aspired to be a serious literary person, and I wanted to understand why it was valued so highly, and I wanted to be the kind of person that appreciated it. So, there was this kind of ambition and aspiration for me even in reading it. But I did love it. I mean, as a teenager, I had a lot of empty time to fill. Growing up in provincial England in the 80s, there wasn't that much to do, so there was a lot of imaginative space for a book to take up residence in my mind.
So you've read it how many times now?
Well, I don't know exactly, but it's been roughly every 5 years since then. It's probably 8 times. I might have read it 10. Somewhere around that.
So when you...
I'm now 47.
When you seek to read it again, and I'm assuming you'll do so shortly, or in a year or so, do you do so seeking, say, clarification or wisdom about something? I mean, is there something that you're looking for when you're reading it?
No, I mean, I don't regard it as like a self-help book. I've got a problem with life, and what can Middlemarch tell me about how to handle it? It's much more subtle than that. I mean, I think that, the book doesn't tell you how to live your life, but the way that you live your life teaches you further how to read the book and how more deeply to understand the book. But certainly there are, elements of Middlemarch that are very instructive and illuminating to think about one's life in the government. I mean, a lot of it is concerned with marriage, what makes a good marriage, what makes a terrible marriage, how can things go horribly wrong, what does one owe one's partner, and these are things that all of us who are married have to think about when we're not thinking about, whose turn it is to take out the trash. These are significant questions. So, it does help to focus the mind on those issues,
Yeah, and so every experience reading it brings something new to you, I guess, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I first read it, I identified very much with this young, ardent woman because I was a young, ardent woman. But then there's another prominent character, who's Tertius Lydgate, who's a doctor, and he arrived in Middlemarch with the goal of making great scientific advances, and his ambitions are sort of fatally compromised, partly by a marriage that he makes to an empty-headed the town beauty, but also through a series of kind of accommodations he makes with people around him, and he just kind of lets his ideals be eroded and his morals be eroded. And I think that although that story was very powerful when I was young, that whole idea of how one might fail in one's large aspirations professionally was definitely spoke to me more when I was in my 30s, say, and I was establishing my own career as a writer and thinking, what do I want to achieve? What am I failing? You get to a certain point in life where different aspects of this novel speak in a louder voice than they did at other times.
So George Eliot was the pen name of Marianne Evans. How much of her is, say, in Middlemarch? I mean, are there similarities, say, to some of the characters in Middlemarch and to her own life?
Not really to her life in the sense, you know, she was a remarkable woman. I mean, she grew up in a provincial town in the Midlands, which is where Middlemarch is set. But she left and she moved to London in her early 30s and became a journalist. She was an editor and critic at the Westminster Review, and she became one of the leading intellectuals of her age. She was taken very seriously by everybody who mattered. And it wasn't until she was in her late 30s that she started to write and publish fiction under the pseudonym George Eliot. So she lived a remarkable life, and a groundbreaking one. And the characters in Middlemarch, none of them do. I mean, they all lead, many of them have aspirations to do significant things, and none of them accomplish what they really aspire to do. She didn't tell a heroic story like her own story. But there are definitely aspects of her character in many of the characters, and maybe all of them. I mean, maybe a novelist puts herself in every character in the book. But there are, you know, both in the ardent young heroine, there are elements of George Eliot in that, but also in the failed scholar whom the character Dorothea marries. George Eliot was once asked who she had based this figure upon, this failed, crabbed, desiccated man, and she pointed to herself. She felt, she was putting herself into this character too. So,
And she fascinated you to the point that you wrote about her in The New Yorker, I guess, right?
I did, yeah. I mean, this book grew out of an article that I wrote for The New Yorker that was really a kind of exploration and figuring out what I wanted to write in a larger sense, what the book might be. But she was a very inspiring person. She, as I say, she lived this remarkable life. She was toweringly brilliant. And she lived an unconventional personal life, too. She didn't marry until later, but she lived for 24 years with a man to whom she couldn't get married because he was married to somebody else. And then after he died, she was briefly married to a man who was 20 years younger than she was. That marriage only lasted about 7 months because she died after that. But she defied convention over and over.
I guess we saw tweets about her from Lena Dunham not too long ago, right?
Yeah. Lena Dunham tweeted about, I don't remember exactly what she said, but she sort of, like, essentially, George Eliot was a badass, you know, and and I think she was. Well, she would have liked to have been married to the man that she lived with for all those years. She couldn't get married to him, but you know, it's fantastic that someone like Lena, with her reach and her audience, would be thinking about George Eliot and reading Middlemarch. It's very thrilling to me.
Yeah. I doubt there's another book that's grasped you as Middlemarch has, but is there something that's a close second, say, in terms of one that you think about regularly, perhaps? Or that you turn to?
There's nothing that's really a close second, no. I mean, there are certain authors, and there are certain, especially poems, especially poetry that I read when I was a young person that sort of stuck in my head and that I find myself calling upon in different situations. But there's really no novel for me that, there's nothing that I've read as many times as Middlemarch, and there's nothing that has spoken to me as profoundly as Middlemarch has done. So no, there's not even a close second.
Yeah. Do you have an idea of who should read Middlemarch? And by that, it sort of leads into another question that I have in terms of how Middlemarch is received by audiences, say, in North America, Canada, and the United States, as opposed to, say, those in Britain.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, you know, anybody who loves books should read Middlemarch. I mean, it's a fantastic book, and it looks a bit intimidating because it's, you know, 800 or 900 pages long, depending on the edition that you read. But it is absolutely gripping as a story. I mean, way more than Downton Abbey. And it is so complex in its psychology. It's so wise. It's very funny. In a, you know, once you realize that it's supposed to be funny, which it's sometimes a little difficult to do with Victorian literature. You don't know that they're kidding when they are. It's very, very arch and ironic. You know, anybody that's enjoyed the novels of Jane Austen and doesn't know what to read next should try George Eliot, because she builds on what Austen did in the Comedy of Manners and then takes it so much deeper and further. I mean, I love Jane Austen, but the depth and the wisdom of George Eliot, you know, outstrips everybody, not just Austen. I can't think of anybody I would say, oh, don't read it. I mean, it's not that, you know, everybody will love it, and it doesn't speak to every reader, but, I mean, it has stood the test of time, and there are enough important writers of fiction who consider it the most important work of fiction written in the English language that, you know, I think we can say, you know, it's a pretty good book.
And it stands up when it crosses the Atlantic and, say, for readers in this part of the world?
I think it completely does. I mean, because, you know, there's a lot of detail in it that's very specific to Victorian England. And it's, of course, set, it was written in 1871, but it's set in around 1830, so it was already a historic. So there are certain like the clothing or the modes of transport, you know, you may not necessarily know what some of those things are. I don't know what some of those things are. But that doesn't matter, because the interior lives of these characters are, you know, as present day as they could be. I mean, it's silly to say that it feels modern. It just feels eternal. I mean, these questions of, you know, What? How should one miss one's life? You know, I mean, it's the biggest question, and they're all wrestling with it. And so it will speak to you even if you don't know what the Reform Act of 18 whatever is.
Yeah. Well, what do you know now that you didn't know, say, 30 years ago because of Middlemarch?
Oh, that's such a good question, and it would be hard for me to say because, you know, I don't know what I would be like if I'd not read Middlemarch when I was a kid and had not kind of taken it to my heart in this way. But, I mean, you know, when I look at the bit that I read when I was a teenager, I can see that there are all these sentences that I underlined, and they're mostly kind of cautionary things about the how difficult marriage is or the mistakes that one can make getting married. And, I mean, I didn't know when I was 17 that these things would be relevant or useful to me in my life, but it turns out, you know, of course they are and they were, and it may be that, you know, I didn't get married until I was 37, I think, and, you know, I may have been scared off by Middlemarch, I'm not sure.
Do you worry that young people of today fail to cultivate relationships with books or a book as you have?
Well, I mean, you know, I think I was lucky in the ways that I thought I was unlucky. I mean, I grew up in this provincial town, and there wasn't very much to do, and, we only had three channels on TV, and they didn't have anything on them most of the time, and there wasn't the internet, and, you know, there wasn't a movie theater where I grew up, and, you know, so I had to read books. There wasn't that much else to do. And I hated that at the time, and I wanted to escape and to get to somewhere more exciting. But now I realize, of course, how precious that time was to, you know, read and think and really get these works kind of embedded in my consciousness. And I do worry about kids, young people, not having the time or the presence of mind to read. But on the other hand, you know, I mean, I'm a stepmother to three sons, and I have an eight-year-old as well, and my stepchildren are all in their 20s. And, you know, they can all read, and they do all read, and, you know, carry a book around in their pockets. And, you know, they have plenty of other distractions, too. So I think that the pleasures of reading haven't diminished, and, you know, they're always there to be discovered. I'm not sort of desperately worried that reading's going to stop.
Yeah, that in reading what I've read of the book thus far, I mean, that's what really struck me was the affection that you have for a book, and it made me want to read Middlemarch as well. But beyond that, it made me want to think about the books, or the book in my life that means a great deal to me, and I'm wondering what that book might be, or wondering if I've read it yet, you know?
Well, I mean, not everybody necessarily has to have a book that they go back to every 5 years, and not every great book even will withstand it or needs to, you know. But, you know, there are books that are amazing to read when you're in your 20s and maybe not so when you're older. You may be young enough that you haven't realized or discovered yet what the one that you need to go back to is.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to finish this book, Rebecca. It's a very fine achievement. Congratulations and good luck with it.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
The same. The book is called My Life in Middlemarch. It's a Bond Street book, which is an imprint of Random House. Its author, Rebecca Mead, joined me on the line from Toronto. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Fontaine.